Thanks Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors for its support of Focus 580. Overhead Doors is pleased to support public radio in Central Illinois on behalf of its customers and business associates.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. It's our morning talk show. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us as we begin another week's worth of programs. We're also pleased to have here with us for the first hour of the show today, Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He is on the program every month. It's always a Monday, the third Monday of the month. And we do these shows to give you a regular, predictable opportunity to call in and ask questions about home maintenance. Maybe there's a problem and you need to fix something and you're not quite sure how to go about it. Something, you want to change something, you want to do some remodeling, any and all of that, we're happy to have the questions. Hank knows a lot about all the various pieces and parts of the single family home. So if it has something to do with the basement or the attic, with the roof or the gutters, with windows, doors, with siding, with insulation, with heating, with cooling, any and all of that is certainly fair game. Here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, the number is 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that would get any place that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. So, if you have questions, you give us a call. I know Hank will do his best to give you an answer. Well, thanks for being here.
Oh, it's always good to be back.
We got a fax, or maybe it came in by a letter. From a listener down in southern Illinois, not all that far from Effingham, explaining that they were planning on replacing their electric air conditioning and gas furnace, which is over 19 years old. And they just were interested in having some discussion of options for furnaces and air conditioning these days. And I know that you had a chance to look at the letter. We faxed it to you. So for the benefit of these folks, what can you tell them?
Well, one of the things that they wanted to do was to get the furnace out of the house so they had more room in the area in which it was. And they asked about a unit that was made by Amana that mounts entirely outside. It is a combination gas furnace and air conditioner. And the only thing you connect up with is the ducts, the return and supply ducts in the house. Mm-hmm. I've seen a number of them in operation. They seem to work quite well. Another option is to put a unit in the attic. You put a horizontal furnace in the attic, you still end up with a pad-mounted air conditioner on the outside. But you can put the furnace in the attic and hooked in to duct system. And there's at least one brand of them that uses very small ducts with high velocity. In other words, ductwork can be pulled through a standard 2x4 wall. And then they have a special muffler section at the end discharge to reduce the air noise. I have that kind of system for my air conditioning. In other words, my house has hot water heat, so the boiler is in the basement. There's no ductwork, and I mounted this unit in the attic and run cooling in to the ceilings of all of the rooms. Now, of course, air coming in the ceiling is much better for cooling than it is for heating. So either one of those would be a good possibility. They noted that their unit was something like 18 or 19 years old. Mm-hmm. In that period of time, we have about doubled the efficiency of air conditioners. We may have made maybe 10% efficiency gain in furnaces, but air conditioners really have doubled. Any air conditioner that's at hold had an SEER, a seasonal energy efficiency ratio, of about 6. Well, that is 6 BTUs of cooling per watt of electricity. As of January 1 of 2005, all new ones are required to have a minimum SEER of 12, which is a true doubling of efficiency. Hmm. So that may be a good reason, and if they want to gain the space, they can go either to an attic mount unit or to the one that's mounted on a pad outside, and both seem to work very well.
Is there some way of saying in a general way what sort of energy savings you might expect if you had an older air conditioner like that? Say it was 20 years old and you replaced it with
If you figure out what portion of your electric bill was due to cooling, you could about cut it in half. So, yes, I had one that was about about 15 years old, and I threw it away even though it worked because I use air conditioning a lot. If you don't use air conditioning very much, it may be more difficult to justify. I'm afraid I'm one of these people who turns them on in May and off in October. And if you only air condition when it's 95 plus outside, no, it probably won't pay to do it. But if you use air conditioning regularly, probably the most economical thing you can do with an old air conditioner is throw it away.
Okay. Well, I hope that that helps these folks who have who wrote in. And if they have further questions, they can...
They can always give me a call.
All right. Very good. Our guest this morning here in this part of Focus 580, Hank Spiess from the Spiess Home Inspection Service. He is on the program every month. We do these shows on home maintenance. If you have questions, you can call us. 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. We have a couple of callers here ready to go, and we'll start with someone listening this morning in Champaign, and that is line number one. Hello.
Hi, I have another question about the high-velocity air conditioning.
Sure, yes.
I also have hot water heat, and I never want to live without hot water heat. I never want to live with forced hot air. I really don't like the way it feels. But I'm wondering whether you, what's your experience with noise and drafts with the high-velocity system?
Well, the system that I have, and which I think is the most popular of that kind, has about a three-foot-long muffler section that attaches at each outlet, and the noise really is very minimal. I was surprised that once when an animal got in the attic and chewed up one of those, I had to run it for a while without a muffler section, and that made a huge difference.
Yeah.
But
you don't think it's any more noisy than the standard?
Well, I won't say any more, but not. It certainly isn't objectionably noisy.
Yeah, yeah, and it has a consistent noise. You don't hear it cycling on and off too much.
Well, it depends on the sizing of your unit. If you have an oversized air conditioner, it will cycle. If you have one properly sized or slightly undersized, which mine is, then it virtually doesn't cycle at all.
Yeah, because I live in a small house. Of only 1,300 square feet. And then the other question is, I'm thinking of updating this hot water system, which is very old, and I'm wondering whether I can retain the radiators that I have or whether I have to go through getting rid of the radiators and putting on the...
No, there's no reason at all why you can't continue to use the existing radiators.
Okay.
You just replace it with a boiler that has high efficiency.
Okay. Thanks very much.
All right. Thank you. Let's go to line number two. This is the next caller in Urbana. Hello.
Yes, hi. I have a exhaust fan in my attic with a thermostat control. Wonder what temperature I should set that for in the summer.
Oh, I would probably set it somewhere around 100.
Okay.
Because you're not going to have that much temperature difference by the time, depending on how much insulation is in the attic.
Yeah.
If it's reasonably well insulated, 100 should do fine.
Oh, and if it's not reasonably insulated?
Yeah, you might set it down to 90.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
All right. And to someone here on a cell phone, they're on the road, line number four. Hello.
Hi, Mr. Spiess. We have a split-level house, and in the middle level, we have a leak in our roof. And right now, it's about a square foot area of damage that we can see. And my first question is there any way to estimate how much that would cost to repair? And the second question is, my husband, who you know, wants to know if he can do it himself.
Well, I don't see any reason why he can't if he's a good do-it-yourselfer.
And, okay.
as far as an estimate, no, you'd have to call a contractor. There's no real way. Because there are two factors. One is the extent of the damage to the interior finish, and the second is the actual repair of the leak.
Uh-huh.
And there's vastly different costs depending on what the cause is.
Okay. All right, thank you.
All right, well, thanks for the call. Other people who are listening are certainly welcome to call if you have questions. Home maintenance questions, that's what we're doing here this morning. We do it every month with Hank Spiess from the Spiess Home Inspection Service, 333-9455. That's the Champaign-Urbana number. We do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. Since we had, before, we were talking a little bit about cooling, and we're now coming into the cooling season. Maybe I'd ask you to once more give the method for assessing the efficiency of your cooling, and it has to do with getting yourself a couple of thermometers.
Well, yes. Generally speaking, you can check and see whether your system is working properly by putting a thermometer in the return air and another one in the outlet closest to the air handler. If you have a relatively new system, say within 5 years or so, the temperature difference between these two thermometers ought to be about 10 to 12 or 13 degrees. If you have an old system, one of these ones that's 20 years old that I contend should be replaced anyway, the temperature difference may be as high as 20 degrees. Anything less than 15 is probably a cause for suspicion. Now, let's make the assumption that you have changed the filters on the air conditioner before you do this.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you restrict the airflow through the system with a clogged filter, then even on a modern system, the temperature drop will be high. So we start out by changing the filter, then checking the temperature on the inlet and outlet of the system and see whether it's working. If you are getting less than 10 degrees on a modern system or less than 15 degrees on an old system, you may need to have a service kit. You may be a little bit low on Freon on the system.
Okay. All right. Let's talk with some other folks here. Let's go to Champagne, line number one. Hello.
Hi. Got an old house, and the upstairs toilet, we have to plunge it maybe once a week, sometimes more. And also, it seems like the water pressure up there is a lot it's low compared to the rest of the house, and which I guess that may not be.
That shouldn't have anything to do with the toilet operation.
Okay.
Because it will still continue to fill the tank. The difference being if you have a shower up there, you may not get a very strong stream out of the shower.
Right.
A house that age, we're looking undoubtedly at galvanized iron piping, which can accumulate a coat of minerals on the inside. And about the only thing you can do with that is to replace the piping. There's no good way of getting the minerals out of the pipe. A house that age probably was in existence for quite some time before we had municipal softening system. And the accumulation of minerals was fairly common. As far as getting the toilet, probably there is a partial blockage someplace, and it's going to take a plumber to go through and trim out the pipes and make sure that there is nothing stuck. I think one of my classics on that was that we found a couple of kids' toys that had been flushed down the toilet that caused periodic blockages, and the child contended that since they lived in the sewer, he was just sending them back home.
This was the Ninja Turtle, as I recall. I remember the story.
Yeah. So there are things like that do happen. Something gets dropped into a toilet. It may not always cause a problem, but will occasionally hang something up, and then you have to plunge the toilet.
So, okay, so the let me get this straight. The galvanized piping with the accumulation of minerals, that could affect the ability to flush?
No. It will affect the shower. It will not affect the ability to flush.
Okay.
And if you have low pressure at shower, you might check. Many of the showers these days have flow restrictors in them for water conservation, mm-hmm. and all it takes is a little bit of sand in the system to reduce it even further.
Okay. Well, the shower works fine. So.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Very good. Let's continue. We'll go to Charleston. This is the next caller. It's line number two. Hello.
Hello. I have a couple of questions. One is that we're in the process of having our hot water heater changed right now and have copper piping going into the hot water heater for the to deliver the gas.
Yes.
And I've heard that there are problems with gas and copper piping.
Well, that is a subject of considerable debate. For instance, Champaign Urbana do not permit copper pipe. Decatur won't let you use anything else. And the gas for both all three cities come from the same pipeline. The theory being that there is a certain amount of sulfur in the gas that we get here, and eventually a coating of copper sulfide can build up on the inside of the copper pipe. And if it flakes off, a flake may get loose and then get in a valve and not allow a valve to shut off completely. However, the same thing can be said if you get a particle of rust out of a steel pipe.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that this is, I hate to say it, but I think it was mostly to make more work for the plumbers union.
So the house was built in 67. Should we think about changing the pipe in any case, or just
as long as everything is working fine, I wouldn't touch
it. Okay. The other question that I have, we also have hot water heat and with no air conditioning, so there's no ductwork in the house. And we've been thinking about putting in air conditioning and had heard about a split system where there's a piping that comes into each individual room and not ductwork. Do you know about those systems?
Yes. But it takes a separate unit for each room, and that gets kind of expensive.
Uh-huh.
I think how big a house do you have?
1,100 square feet.
Well, you might be able to go with that. Basically, it's the equivalent of a window air conditioner, except instead of sticking through the window, they just run a pipe through the wall to an outside unit.
Uh-huh.
And so that's basically it.
But is it possible to get different units that go in different rooms from the same outside system?
Yes.
So that's probably what we would be looking at.
You can do that. They may have separate units outside, one for each one. But, yes, that'd be a possibility. The other possibility, as I say, is to put an air handler in the attic, which is the normal system.
Right, yeah.
And generally speaking, you have a little less noise with them, but in the rooms, but that and you don't have very much ductwork to run in a house that size to put it in the attic.
Uh huh.
As long as the ducts are well insulated, it's not really a problem.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. And we'll go next to back here to Urbana for another caller, line 3. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I also have a question about a toilet. I noticed because I had to jiggle the handle from the inside just coincidentally that when the toilet is filling up, that there's a leak. There's like a spray coming from the mechanism at the top, and that it doesn't affect anything. It's all within the ceramic bowl, but it is spraying every time when it's filling up. Is that a problem?
Not really.
Will it get worse?
Quite possibly it will. When you get a spray inside, the usual problem is it sprays up against the bottom of the lid and then drips off the edges.
Yeah, right. But it's not dripping on the outside. But you're saying it could. It could eventually.
Uh-huh. This would require the replacement of that valve.
Right. And until that happens, we don't have to worry about it?
No.
And if we thought about doing it ourselves, so we went over to like Lowe's and we were looking at the what they had, but nothing looked exactly like what was already in the toilet. So then we hesitated and said, "We think we could do it ourselves."
Basically, they've improved them. They don't look quite alike,
but
they function the same way.
So it doesn't have to look exactly like what's in there.
No, certainly doesn't.
Okay, and we don't have to do that until we start to see the liquid, the water on the outside of the tank.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, thanks. All right. I think that if somebody decided they wanted to that the flush mechanism of the toilet needed to be replaced and they weren't sure they could do it themselves, this is not a terribly expensive repair. So if you decided to have a plumber come do it,
it's not, but you can also, if you are reasonably handy, they sell kits that replace virtually the entire mechanism inside the toilet tank.
Mm. And that's relatively easy to do?
Yeah.
Okay.
As long as you know how to turn off the water and back out all the bolts and things like this. Yes, it can be done.
Okay.
Even you could do it.
Even me? Well, then it'd have to be really, really easy if even I could do it. Plumbing is just, well, never mind. I don't want to talk about that. Let's go to line number one for another caller. And that's Urbana. Hello.
Hello. Hello. Good morning, Hank. I have a new dehumidifier in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of just having a choice of low or high, it has a series of numbers, presumably percentage of moisture. And I'm wondering whether you have to be taking into account the outside air temperature and the amount of humidity, or whether there's a number that you can just set it at, which is good.
That you can pretty well set. Anything in the 40 to 50 range usually works pretty well.
40 to 50. Okay. Yep. Thanks very much.
Okay. And even if you had a damp basement, would you say go for the maximum setting?
You're bringing it down into that 40 or 50 range, there shouldn't be a problem.
Okay. That's also something that I, among the many things that I learned from you, and this was, I think, just in response to somebody who called in, had to do with where in the basement you're going to put it. I guess I was thinking, well, if there was one area that seemed there was the most damp, I want to put the dehumidifier right beside the damp spot. And you said, no, it doesn't work that way.
It doesn't make any difference where you put it. Humidity moves by vapor pressure, not air movement, and it will go to the dehumidifier without any problem. We had a research house here at the university, and we put a humidifier and a dehumidifier in the far corner of the lower level of a four-level house. It really didn't make a bit of difference where it was.
Okay.
You put it where the dehumidifier can drain into a floor drain, so you don't have to keep emptying the tank.
That was the thing that really sold me on the idea. You said, well, put it where it's going to be easiest to drain the condensate, and
right.
Otherwise where you put it, it doesn't matter.
It makes no difference. It's the same way that if you turn on a vaporizer in a child's room in the wintertime, you'll get the humidity everywhere in the house.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're about midway through this hour of Focus 580. This is something that we do every month. Our guest is Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. And if you have questions about home maintenance, and it can be any of the kinds of things we've talked about, we've talked a little bit about air conditioning, but it can also be a furnace question. And in fact, summer is probably the time, if you need to buy a new furnace, July is probably a good time to do that.
Yes, it probably is.
The summer is when you want to do that. And you want to get your air conditioning in the winter, I guess. You don't want to get either one at the peak season for
right. No, you, for your air thing. Conditioner, you stick to spring and fall.
Yeah, okay. So if you're thinking about furnace and you have questions, we can do that. Or anything else, gutters, roofing, windows, siding, any and all of that, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455.
You mentioned gutters. One of the most important things as we approach our spring rainy season is to be sure that we have extensions on the downspouts that carry the water away from the house. On a crawl space house, they should be at least 3 feet away from the house. On a basement, at least 5 feet away from the house, to a point where the water keeps running away, not back toward the house, because this is where we run into problems. And probably two-thirds of the leaky basement calls that I get can be taken care of by adding downspout extensions or adding some dirt around the house to make sure that there is a slope away from the foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes under the deck. Sometimes we build this deck and we get some settlement after it is built, and then we end up with a moat around our castle, at least under the deck, and that needs to be filled or you're going to have problems forever.
Hmm. Is there a way to figure out how many downspouts you should have?
You really need one for probably every 400 square feet of roof would be a good rule of thumb. But it all depends on how your house is configured, where there are valleys and so on. So basically, and the other thing is many of the installers have this tendency of running that downspout right down to the ground. So when you put an extension on it, it's flat. Saw a foot off. So I want that extension to be sloped so that the water cruelly runs away,
mm-hmm.
not backs up through the joints.
Okay. Well, we got some other folks here lined up and ready to go. Was there something else that you want? Okay. In fact, the lines are full, so we'll get right back into it, and we'll start with someone in Champaign, line one. Hello. Is there a call there in Champaign, line one?
Yeah. I had a buzz when I couldn't hear what
you said. Well, go ahead. We got you now.
Yes. Hank, I've got a problematic railing. I decided I wanted an arced railing on my deck. So I had that made and found out that it's very difficult to find somebody to make it. What we did was took a piece of white oak, which is good for exterior, and cut it and then bent it and glued it together. My problem is everything's holding except I can't coat this thing with anything that will stay. We've been using a Varathane, and I've had recommendations that I want a urethane.
Well, Varathane is a urethane.
Okay. So it's one and the same.
Yes.
What's happening is the sun gets to it, and I don't know if I need some of the particulate in it. I have used the total wood protection that you recommend that I had to do some driving to get, and it's beautiful. It's on cedar, and it's, I found out that my brother's been using it on his deck for 20 years. Do you have any ideas or... I call this an experimental railing, and I think I'm still in that stage.
Okay. Well, I presume the means of failure is that the coating is peeling off?
Correct, yeah.
Okay. Generally speaking, on something that's exposed, and I don't know if you've done the bottom of the rail or not, but it tends to absorb moisture. We try not to get an absolutely waterproof coating. This is why we've been using the water repellents and so on. It probably, a stain or a water repellent instead of the urethane would probably last longer.
How about the Total Wood Protection product?
I think it probably would help considerably and use that instead of the urethane.
Okay, so I would have to get all of the urethane off it. It stayed on the vertical, but the horizontal, it didn't want to stay.
That's not unusual because you don't have good drainage off the horizontal.
Yeah, it's an arc, but it doesn't drain as fast as a vertical. So should I strip the whole thing down?
Well, you don't. If you're not having a problem on the balusters, I probably wouldn't bother with them, but I would...
No, it's metal, the baluster.
Oh, okay.
It's just, and it's a metal, it's got a metal top that this wood arc screws to.
Uh-huh.
I just having trouble keeping it sealed up on top. So if I went to the total wood protection on this, should I sand off the remaining Varathane?
Yes.
Okay. Well, one other thing, while I have you on the phone, I do landscape, I do a lot of older homes, and drainage is always an issue, and I think there are a couple problems. One is they go with the small gutters and the small downspouts, and you're right, they don't, they run them all the way to the ground. On the new homes, if the contractor would be so kind as to just put a slip under the sidewalk, we have to bore under sidewalks, and it's a mess, but when I tell people they got to clean their gutters out 4, 5, 6 times a year, they look at me like I'm from Mars. I say, well, just walk out sometime when it's raining hard and just look at your gutters, and they just don't accommodate the water that comes off the roof.
Yeah, Illinois weather produces some very heavy rainfalls for a few minutes.
Yeah.
And I remember when we used to have discussions with the window and door manufacturers that they would design their windows and doors to withstand a rainfall rate of 4 inches an hour. And it never rains 4 inches an hour. Well, unfortunately, in Champaign-Urbana, for 1 or 2 minutes, we get rainfall rates at 15 inches an hour.
Yeah. What I've been successful in doing is we kind of dig out a bowl under the downspout and put 45 mil roofing vinyl, and then we run that out and we cover it with gravel so that the debris that comes out of the downspout the people can clean up. I just don't think everyone that I've seen where they hook a tile up to a downspout, it's just a matter of time before it doesn't work.
That's true.
Go ahead.
I've taken the similar approach. I've taken all the gutters off my house, and I dug a trench under the drip edge, lined it with plastic, filled it with gravel, put a pipe, perforated pipe down it, and carried it away. And I haven't cleaned a gutter in 15 years.
That's great. Now, I have seen a spec, I don't know where it came from, of putting an underground roof. So under the soil about a foot, you actually dig and angle it away from the house, put your roofing vinyl in, then put your soil back so you can have your plants, but you've got that subterranean
yes.
water barrier.
Yeah, that was developed by Bill Rose here at the university.
Oh, well, I've yet to do that, but I think that would be a great thing for a new home. Well, I've taken up enough time, but I appreciate your information.
Okay. Well, thanks for the
Bye-bye.
Call. Well, that sounds just sort of like your plan, although in his plan, he doesn't have a tile in there.
He doesn't have a tile in there, no. He just lets it soak down, but he makes it go out a couple of feet before it soaks down.
Uh-huh. So as long as you get it far enough away from the foundation, then it should go ahead and percolate into the soil and not then come.
Right. It should go in probably down to the footing drain and be carried away that way.
Okay. Well, we got some other folks here ready to go, and next we'll talk with somebody in Champaign, and that's line two. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi. I had a question about toilets, actually. My five-year-old, he dropped a bar of soap down the toilet, and we plunged, and it flushed one time after that, and now it doesn't really flush and go through anymore.
Yeah. You'll probably have to get a plumber to run a snake through it and knock it loose or chop it up enough so it goes through.
Oh, that's it?
That's it.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right, thanks. That would not eventually just dissolve? It would take a while.
You're not flushing it now at all, so no, there isn't going to be water going past it to dissolve it.
Oh, okay. Okay. Call the plumber. All right. Let's go to Chicago, line four. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
Got a brick four flat built in the 20s. I guess you know those buildings.
Yes.
Just a trickle of hot water in the tub and the kitchen sink. I think you answered the question before.
Yeah, I think you've got the galvanized pipe that's picked up mineral deposits and so on. In Chicago water, you never know what it's going to pick up. And
there's nothing much you can do.
There's not much you can do about it sort of replacing the pipe.
Uh-huh. All right, then. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Let's go to Lafayette, line number three. That's next. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
Do you suggest pitching a gutter along the roof?
It should have a little bit of pitch to it, yes. We have to be careful we don't get it so much that the gutter comes out from behind the drip edge on the roof. But, a 40-foot gutter is going to take more pitch than you usually have up there for that.
More than I see. I look at every one in town, and they all seem to be absolutely square on.
Okay. They work much better if you get a little, half-inch pitch to the length of the gutter. It works much better.
And even if it comes below the drip line, I suppose you could use an extra sheet of...
That's right. You use a strip of aluminum and tuck it under the drip edge and into the gutter.
Mm-hmm. I know you keep urging the slope away from the house, but what's a person to do when even an inch or two would more fill next to the house would bring it up against the
You have to grade a swale board about 3 or 4 feet out from the house so that surface will run away. Yes, we do not want the soils to be within certainly no less than 4 and preferably at least 6 inches below the siding.
Well, I don't have that.
Well, you'll have to make a trench so you do. It's going to take some major regrading. Yes, this is a problem we have that builders tend to set the houses too low. They should come out of the ground one more concrete block. And they can tend, people don't like the house sitting high. Well, that may be true the first time buyer, but after someone has fought the problem that you have, it's an easy sell for the second time buyer.
So you're suggesting we do some major digging out.
You form a swale, something you can mow through, shallow trench, go down to that, and then slope that out to the street or whatever your drainage system is.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
All right. Let's go to Belgium, over by Danville, line one. Hello.
Good morning, sir. Mm-hmm. I'd like to make a suggestion to the gentleman that had the problem with the finish sticking on the white oak rail.
Okay.
If I might suggest. Another way to handle the problem would be to take off the finish you have, sand it properly, and then really give it a good tung oil coating. And you'd have to recoat that regularly because it will work off the wood. But white oak being closed ring type wood, it'll stand up to the weather pretty good. But you'll have to keep sanding it. The problem the person's going to have is the glue joints that were put into the white oak will probably fail with the water over time. Should have used teak, would have been a much better wood.
Well, yeah, but that it's a lot easier to get white oak here than it is teak.
Well, that's you can get teak. It's not difficult at all. You just have to have a supplier.
And I'm amazed as I go over to England and see many of the 200-year-old houses with Tudor detailing, and that oak is still in good shape.
Oh, yes. White oak will not absorb water hardly at all. But you do have to keep replacing the finish on it because it never will completely stick. And if you put urethanes on it, the wood's going to move enough that it's always going to split up your finish and it's always going to be flaking off. That's the problem, is the wood movement over the period of time, a little moisture, a little weather, a little heat, a little cold. And the plastic finish is just staying in place, cracking off.
Yes, you're absolutely correct. We tend not to take into consideration the movement of our building materials with changes in temperature and humidity.
The person probably also has it attached fairly firmly to the metal, which he'll probably end up finding in time that it will split at those portions because the wood itself is moving in many different directions, mainly tangentially. Mm-hmm. Well, better let you get on.
All right. Well, thanks for the call.
Sure, fine.
Other questions are certainly welcome. We have about 15 minutes left in this part of Focus 580 with Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He's on the program every month, always on a Monday, the third Monday of the month. If you want to mark that on your calendar, and if you have questions about home maintenance, you call us here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. We're coming into the point of the year now where probably more people are going to be doing outside painting. And maybe, again, people will be thinking that, looking at this whole oil-based latex question. Now, I'm sure that most people, if they had their way, they probably would use the latex paint because...
Yes, I would too.
For the reasons that it's a much easier to clean your brushes and get it off you and... Is that truly... Are you going to get as good a finish with that?
Yes, you can. There have been considerable improvements in the latex paints. You can put latex over oil, but please never put oil over latex.
Okay, because it won't...
Because
it
of
won't
the difference in
properly.
Permeability.
Okay.
But yes, nowadays we have manufacturers who will guarantee latex paint for 20 years. I'm not sure that I believe it, but they seem to have some basis for making that statement.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, I would definitely consider a latex paint. Of course, I never advised painting vinyl. There are special paints made for repainting aluminum siding. And I know that there are some manufacturers who say, well, just use our good latex paint. I've found that the paints that are made specifically for metal siding lasts a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the manufacturers, Pittsburgh, for instance, makes the one that I usually use and for a matter of repainting metal. And that seems to work very well.
Well, that, I guess, gets another question that we've had from people from time to time who are thinking about putting siding on. Or maybe you're replacing an old product, and that is, what do you like better, your metal or your vinyl? And I guess one of the things that you would say to people is, well, if you're going to get vinyl siding, you better like the color.
That's absolutely
because,
true.
Because you cannot change it. If you want to change it after that, you're going to have to rip it off and you have to put something else on.
Well, there are some products that claim work on vinyl siding, but I've never seen one that I thought worked well.
Yeah. So that one thing that you cannot do, you would say from your experience, you can't paint it.
Right.
There are other other advantages that the vinyl has, however.
Yes. Well, one of the major problems with vinyl is the fact that it expands and contracts more than any other building material we have on the job.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that it cannot be fastened down tightly. You have to nail it in slotted holes so it can move, or else it will buckle, snap, pack, crackle, and pop as the sun goes around the house, and this sort of thing. So you have to take into account the movement of vinyl with tinges and temperature.
Okay. Well, let's talk with some other folks. We've got someone over in Bloomington, Indiana, on next, and that would be line 4, toll-free line. Hello.
Yes.
Yes, go ahead.
Question about the water in a crawl space. We do not have a perimeter drain. We're putting in one. We're going to put pea gravel within a foot of the top of the ground. Are we on the right track?
Yes, you might want to lay plastic under the gravel that extends down under the drain so that any water that does trickle down through can't soak in, but rather has to go to the drain tile.
Okay.
But otherwise, yes, you certainly are on the right track.
All right. Now, how close to the house do we have to be? After a house is built, obviously there are some restrictions.
Well, basically you have to be closer than the drip line off the roof.
Okay.
If you can get that plastic all the way to the foundation under the, if you take your gravel fill back to the foundation, that's fine.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Very good. We have somebody next on a cell phone here in Champaign. Hello.
Hi. I just have a question. We're going to be installing, or we hope to install, a utility sink. And I'd like some advice as far as what we should be looking at as far as, the plumbers and what we should have, what they should provide in their bid. And
where are you going to put it?
Well, we're contemplating either the laundry room is on the first floor, and so we're thinking of putting it near there or alternatively in the garage, depending on if they can extend the lines that far. We don't know. That's something we're trying to figure out.
I was going to suggest that you try not to put it in the garage.
Oh, not to. Okay.
because that's where you have a chance of freezing both the supply lines and the trap.
Oh, okay. So that's not the best place to put it. Okay.
Okay, and you will find it more useful, at least most people find it more useful, in the laundry room.
Okay.
That depends on how much outside work your husband does so that he's dumping paint into it or something like that.
But, well, that's kind of the thing. he does both painting and then, but then also with kids, we need to soak their clothes a lot,
Yeah, you need to wash the dog and all this sort of thing.
Right. we kind of looked over at the, the big super center stuff and looked at, and they have not a lot of variety of sinks. They have like plastic ones, and we didn't really see we'd like a deeper metal one. And of course, like my in-laws have an old cast iron one that is nice and deep.
And you never see those anymore.
Yeah, So what are our options? Are those our only options? Or
basically, yes. You can, unless you get somebody to custom build one, which is very expensive.
Right.
In general, the cast plastic ones work pretty well.
They do? Okay. Yeah. What's their life expectancy, the plastic ones? They're pretty durable?
Yes. I can't say I've ever seen one that I thought died of old age.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's good. And then as far as what should we be asking the plumbers as far as, like, the certain kind of – they're going to tell us as far as the piping they're going to use and the and what about you said a trap? Is that going to be also needed, especially if it's in the laundry room?
Well, there's any sink drain requires a trap.
Okay.
So that – and generally speaking, in these days, this will be part of the plastic drain lines.
Okay. Okay, and then do they have to expand the pipes in the area if they add on another sink?
You're not pulling the plug on everything at once.
Okay, so that should be okay. And how much generally do these things run? Do you have an idea?
No, it all depends on the plumber you use and exactly how much piping he has to do in the house. So get a couple of bids.
Get a couple of bids, okay. And most of the guys around here are pretty reputable. We're not from this area, so we're not really sure about. We were just going to go to the phone book and call a few folks.
Okay. If you call my office number, I can tell you two or three people that I would call.
Oh, okay. Well, that would be helpful. And you're in the phone book?
Yes, Bees Home Inspection Service.
Great. Well, wonderful. Okay. Well, thanks for your help.
All right. Very good. Okay. Thanks for the call. We'll go on again here. Next is someone also in Champaign. This is line number two.
Good morning. We have about a 110, 15-year-old house with lots of double-hung windows with sash weights and cords, and, of course, they are breaking or are broken. Is there a way of fixing that without opening them up and rehanging new cords? I seem to remember there being some kind of a friction strip type thing that can be inserted in the tracks.
Yes. One of the local big box stores used to carry them, but I haven't seen them for some time. But yes, there is a window fixer kit which uses spring-loaded metal tracks that serve as weather strip and so on. You pull the existing windows out, line, these are jam liners really, and put those in. And they also have the spring-loaded pulleys at the top with a cable that will help you raise the window again and this sort of thing. As I say, the brand that I've used most is called a window fixer kit. It's available by, it's made by some aluminum company in Quaker State Aluminum in Pennsylvania, and they seem to work quite well. If you decide you want to really repair what you have, the Old House Journal had a wonderful article on how to take them apart, fix them, and put them back together. And again, if you'll call my home number, I'll give you a citation in it.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks. Well, it sounds like in either case, if you're going to replace the old cords and weights, you have to pull the trim off the window.
And you're going to have to get some trim off in order to get the sash out.
Right. And in the other case, though, it sounds like you're going to have to pull the window out in either way.
That's right.
You can't. It's not just something you can stick in there without doing some major deconstructing of the window.
That's correct. You're going to have to pull at least the interior trim and the parting bead.
Okay. Very good. Well, again, if somebody wants to call real quick here, we might get one question in the time that remains. Let me go back. I was just going to ask about painting. We were talking about paint, and you said as far as you're concerned that you would much rather use latex than use an oil-based paint. You talked about how you can go one way. You can go latex over oil, but not oil over latex.
Right.
Okay. What if you have bare wood that has never been painted, would you say use a primer first?
Absolutely. And I would, before I put even the primer on, I would touch sand it. Get one of these little palm sanders and just go over it very rapidly because the sunlight deteriorates the cells on the surface of the wood. So if we take off that surface layer of cells, then the paint sticks much better.
Okay. So that I know this was the tip that you have mentioned many times over the years, and that you just we're not talking about doing a lot of sanding, but just as if you can't right before you're going to paint over it, just run it over the surface a little bit. You'll get a better, it will adhere better.
Right, because the ultraviolet in the sunlight tends to deteriorate the surface. Paint sticks to the surface, but the surface doesn't hang on very well.
Mm-hmm. And if you're going to repaint an already painted surface, and you've done what you can do to scrape it, get loose paint off, maybe here and there you've gone down to where you got a little bit of bare wood. Use a primer again rather than just going over it with your.
Yeah, anytime you've got bare wood, I like to get a coat of primer on it before you put a finish coat.
So what exactly is the difference? What's the primer got in it that's different than regular
paint? It penetrates
paint?
Better into the wood so that it locks on better.
All right.
And so that's the basic purpose of the primer. Yeah.
So then basically you got the primer sticks to the wood and then your next coat of paint sticks to the primer.
Right.
Okay.
So that's the real clue to getting good outdoor wood. But as I say, remember, we don't want to have something that produces a totally impervious coat. This is where we ran into the problem with the urethanes, that any moisture, and there will be some moisture, get into any outdoor wood. You've got to have a way out so it doesn't push the paint surface off in the process. So that's why we're using these water repellents, not sealers, that sort of thing.
Do most paints now, commercial paints that are for outside, have some kind of something in it to discourage mildew growth?
A lot of them have, and you can your paint store can put in an additive. They have a mildew inhibitor additive that they can put in if the paint doesn't. But there's nothing really that's going to keep mildew from occurring in damp places, like on the north side of the house, this kind of thing.
All right. Well, we're just about the point where we finish up here. Any last thing you'd like to leave with folks?
Change your air conditioner filters.
Change the filter. All right, very good. Change the filter, and once the maple trees have finished with those spinning things, then get your gutters
cleaned
out.
Clean your gutters, right.
All right, thank you very much. Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He's on this program once a month on the third Monday at 10 o'clock, and we take questions on home maintenance. Programs here on this radio station are made possible in part by a grant from the folks at Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors is pleased to support public radio in Central Illinois on behalf of its customers and the business associates. The programming here is also made possible by a grant from the folks at Strawberry Fields on West Springfield Avenue in downtown Urbana. Strawberry Fields has an in-store nutritionist. They provide a wide assortment of natural foods, vitamins, and supplements, as well as a full deli, a coffee bar, bulk herbs, fresh breads, and produce. Coming up in the next part of Focus 580, we'll be talking with John Ehrman. He is a foreign policy analyst for the federal government, does some writing about history, has a recent book out that takes a look at economic policymaking and politics in the Reagan administration. It's titled The 80s, America and the Age of Reagan. He'll share some thoughts with us in the next part of Focus 580, so we hope that you'll stick around. We got some news for you at 1 minute past the hour. First, though, an update on the markets. Stay tuned.
And with this update on the markets coming up on 10:59, I'm Jay Pierce. Good morning. Wheat futures on the Board of Trade firming early on a technical bounce after last week's three-month lows, and as weekend rains mostly missed the driest western Kansas wheat fields. July wheat on the Board of Trade at 304 and three quarters, up two. December